Well, hi everyone. Thank you. I'm Marina.
Thank you.
And I'm very grateful that you all want to listen to me. I think that's really nice, and I'm going to feel very supported. I think my higher power has a sense of humor. I was at the women's meeting on Tuesday, and it was announced that at some point in the year, our group was going to be kind of handling the speaker meeting for a month, and so anybody that thought they might speak to speak to Heather. And so in my head, I'm hearing from God, speak up. So I told her I was willing, and then I said, I'd kind of like to get it behind me as quickly as possible. Would February work? And she said, no, that was taken. And I said, well, how about March? And then I found myself at the intergroup meeting, and it was, how about today? So, okay, less time to be nervous. ACA has been an eye-opener. I've been in various 12-step programs. I love them all. I mean, to me, 12-step is 12-step. It's a godsend and it's life. But there's something about ACA, wow, it just hits on a lot of stuff. In terms of exposure to 12-step, I first came, and I mean, the whole thing is such a patchwork of how I came to ACA. I was married to someone who had a terrible problem with alcohol. Wonderful when they were sober, just impossible when they were drunk. And they didn't know, they didn't even realize that if I tried to explain, it went nowhere. And I was in so much denial that I didn't really realize how serious it was. His pattern was that pretty much every day, he'd come home very drunk and very angry around 10 or 11 at night, and would just start yelling and accusing and attacking, and it was just dreadful. But somehow, I guess I thought that was normal. I didn't figure out until I was 28 that my dad was an alcoholic. He wasn't that kind. He was very quiet, never spoke to me. So somebody like this, oh, I don't want you to think less of me, but literally, when we were dating, before we even got married, I was in so much denial that most nights he would be drunk. Most nights he would yell at me. And I didn't think that this was a red flag. I didn't even know there were any red flags. There must have been just everywhere, banners. I couldn't see it. I had no idea. And I was also an atheist before 12-step. And I just was so arrogant. I felt so sorry for all those poor, deluded idiots that believed in God. I was just so superior. But that didn't work for me. And when I was just completely broken and got to my first meeting, I thought, well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to talk to God and find out who God is. Now, to back that up, of course, married to the alcoholic, I finally realized I need to go to Al-Anon. I call for a meeting. They accidentally, I mean, I told them what was happening. They sent me to Carpinteria, this smoky little room with a bunch of people sitting in armchairs and talking quietly. It was a very nice place. I got there sobbing because I had told this man that I was going to go to this meeting. And he said, if you go, I'll divorce you. And he left. And he was sober when he said that. So thought, oh my gosh, he may be gone, but I had to go to the meeting. And I get there, and they're playing tag, which I'd never heard of, but they're calling. Person after person calls on the next one to share, and I was just sitting there sobbing. And, oh, I'm so sorry I interrupted your meeting. I don't belong here. I'm not an alcoholic. And they just said, go ahead, what's going on? I explained what I just said. And they said, look, this happens to be an open meeting, but you keep coming back. You're welcome here. You know, we'll work this out. And so every week I'd go back, and they were so supportive. Well, I didn't trust women. My mother was very difficult. I later learned what made her so difficult. Men, that had always been a problem all my life. And so God gave me this wonderful old gay guy as a sponsor. I mean, he was perfect. And I would never have known to choose that, but it was just ideal. So there I am, 6 months in AA, reading all the books, going to the meetings, loving it, but I don't have a problem with alcohol. I mean, I wished I had. Because I remember the few times I tried to get rid of my problems by drinking, everything was more acute. I was more in touch with how awful I felt, and it just didn't help at all, and I couldn't understand why people would bother. But so then I thought, oh, great, I have to go to Al-Anon. Didn't want to go. And I love Al-Anon, but my first meetings, I realized I was just seeing myself in everyone else and projecting, because I thought everybody was really anxious, really nervous, really stressed and controlling, and I just couldn't stand being there. So I didn't hear the thing about the six meetings before you decide. So I didn't go back to Al-Anon for a while, but my AA friends kept my head above water. Oh my gosh, I will forever be indebted. At any rate, somehow or another, I found my way back to Al-Anon. Unfortunately, it took lots of things, among other things, a broken nose and just a lot of really unpleasant things, but whatever it takes, it's worth it. Going back to, I really wanted to make sure to tell the story. Some of you have heard it already, but I have to tell it. I wasn't really aware of how dangerous my life situation was with somebody who was big and athletic and angry. And I invited one of my friends from France. She was not even 5 foot tall, and her baby to come stay with us for 2 weeks. That was not a good idea. I look back on that and I just think, oh my gosh, how could I have put her in that position? But I wasn't thinking. So he comes home, the usual, very angry, 10 or 11 at night, drunk, and I put myself between my friend and the baby and him. And at that point, I was willing to talk to God, and I said, God, you are going to have to do something about this in my head. And he just came right up to me. And then, for some reason, he just started pushing, like, diagonally. And I was standing. You can only be pushed so far diagonally before you fall. And at that point, this image, and God has a sense of humor, I'll get back to that, this image of a Warner Brothers cartoon bull just snorting and pawing came to mind, and this is what this guy reminded me of. So I started giggling. Well, that made me furious. And he just stormed out of the house and slammed the door, and I went, okay, God, that works. But then he came back a half an hour later, sober, I don't know how, meek as a kitten, and he apologized. And I was just floored. I'm like, okay, God, all right, I get that. Another time again, 10 or 11 at night, comes home angry. I was still atheist pretty much, but still talking to God and studying literature. And so I thought, well, you know, you read the Bible as literature because it's important, it's contributed to Western thought. And I didn't believe a word of it. And I'm reading and I just hit on the sentence, the words of one in despair are as the wind. While this guy is standing here yelling, and I'm thinking, he really is in despair. His yelling was like the buzzing of a mosquito, and I had this mountain of truth in front of me in terms of just, there's God and then there's that. There's God and there's everything else, and it really convinced me. Another thing that's on a lighter note that also convinced me, so an event came up that I had actually no money or clothing for, and I just knew. Go to this thrift store, which I didn't even know existed, down on State Street. At the very back of the store, there's a round rack. Your outfit's right there. And this was all in my mind. It's not like somebody told me. I just knew. So I go downtown. There's the thrift store. There's the round rack at the back. There's the outfit. Didn't even have to try it on. It was like $2 or $3. It was perfect. That was crazy. Another, and again, this is like me on my journey to coming to believe in God. I moved into an apartment where there wasn't any furniture. Then my roommate moved in too. She didn't have any furniture, and we were sitting on the floor. Fortunately, there was carpet, and I just said, you know, if God wants us to have sofas, we'll have sofas. So I go out to the swap meet because I'm helping a friend. I didn't go there looking for sofas. I had happened to been given like $150 or something for Christmas, and so I had money, but I didn't expect to find sofas at the swap meet. Well, this little Datsun truck drives in with the cab on the back, and a voice in my head, I mean, literally, it was like an audible voice that followed the truck. Like, I'm not going to follow the truck. Follow the truck. I'm not going to follow the truck. So I follow the truck. And this kind of friendly, athletic, fireman-type-looking guy gets out, opens up the back, pulls out this beautiful little love seat, and I thought, perfect. Then he pulls out this beautiful sofa. And I was just blown away. Okay. So then I asked, well, how much did he want for them? He said, $150. I had that burning a hole in my pocket. So I gave it to him. I said, why are you selling these beautiful sofas? I mean, there was one little hole that you could easily cover by just throwing like a blanket over it or something, just over the arm rest. And so he said, well, he got his wife new sofas and he wanted to be able to take her out to dinner, and so he was going to sell these sofas. They were perfect. And then, just kind of to confirm the creepy part, I mean, this is all true, it's just weird, but it's true. So I'm sitting there all happy with my sofas, and this really scary looking guy walks up. I mean, he just looked the way you would picture maybe the devil would look. And he goes, oh, it was, no, he's like, I want to buy your sofas. I'm like, I'm sorry, and I said, no, I'm going to buy your sofa. And I was like, go away. And he kept insisting. He was like, whatever you pay, or whatever, yeah, whatever you pay, I'll double it. It's like, no, it's not about the money, because I wasn't going to sell God's sofas. And honestly, I don't think I could have found them for like, what, $600, $900? I don't know. Anyway, I just, it was really hard to convince him to go away, but he did. But God-wise, oh my gosh, God has a sense of humor. Now I can't remember. Did I already say why I ended up doing this? I did, because I was at the intergroup meeting. God had said I was going to be sharing, and then it's today instead of months from now. I think that's easier because I probably would have been this apprehensive about it, for lack of a better word, but until then. So now it's gonna just all happen tonight. But anyway, all these weird little things just really convinced me God is real. And then I thought, well, okay, so fine. If God's real, I want to learn how to pray. I had no idea how to pray. And it hadn't occurred to me to just talk to God like you would talk to anybody else, even though that's what I was doing. I mean, talk about being out of touch with myself. I don't know. Most of what I did was all just kind of in suspended animation. I don't know. But at any rate, I would talk to God. I would read books of prayers that people had written to God. And I love what they say in more than one of the 12-step programs, that take what you like and leave the rest. Because some people would try to tell me who God was and what God was like, and I didn't have to accept that. And I just found somebody who was kind and helpful. It did come time to divorce that first husband. I mean, our house, it was like a revolving door, because he'd move in, he'd move out, he'd move in. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And then at some point, oh, yeah, that was actually really scary. I hadn't thought about that in a long time. I won't go into the details because they were disgusting, but it was very clear to me I needed to move out. And so I said, he basically said, you either improve your attitude or get out in the morning. Only he was projecting, because the one who was doing stuff that needed improving was not me. And so I said, look, I'm doing the best I can with my attitude. I was working my AA program. I can't accept your ultimatums. I'll be out in the morning. Well, so then the next morning, he wouldn't let me out of the house. Fortunately, I had called my parents to say I was going to be moving back there, because he even had a friend come over and they wouldn't let me leave. And that got very scary. And fortunately, my aunt Ann, this is my great aunt Ann, who was like 82 at the time, she comes storming down the sidewalk, and she wasn't even 5 feet tall, and she started pounding on the door, so you let her out of there. So he did, and I left. But anyway, there I was at my parents' house, and I didn't know what to do, because the crazy thing is I was still really in love with this guy. I mean, I really liked the sober guy. He was terrific. And I didn't want to lose him, and I didn't know what to do. So I was just in limbo, living at my parents' house, going to meetings, didn't know what to do with myself. And people would ask me, well, what are you going to do? And I suddenly started saying, and it must have been God, because I didn't think of this, I don't know, but I know that I will know. And one day, I just woke up feeling like it was my birthday. Like, this is perfect. I will file. And there was a guy at some of the open meetings who was an attorney, and I said, hey, would you be willing to do that? Absolutely. So, I mean, for the typical lawyer fees, but I just felt like, great, I have somebody I feel like I can trust, somebody who works the program, knows what this is all about. It went very smoothly, and I was very, very grateful. So that was husband number one. I think I already said I have never chosen a boyfriend or a husband that was a good choice. And that's where ACA really comes in, because I always blame myself. I didn't even know I was struggling with so much self-hatred all my life. But I always thought, well, it was me, I did it all wrong. And then we learn in ACA, we were kind of programmed. We were set up to make these bad choices. I mean, obviously I get to have some input, but I didn't have as much input as I thought I did. I couldn't just blame myself. There was more to it than that. And uncovering things about how our family structure was. You know, I would never have thought that something like my dad being very quiet and gentle and never speaking to me was a form of abuse. But I guess not having that input, not having that affirmation and acknowledgement, it did hurt. And it did cause me to, again, you know, if any guy paid any attention to me, it's like I felt obligated to practically marry them on the spot. Not a very healthy way to go. I made a lot of terrible choices because I didn't even realize I was so desperate for attention and for affection. I mean, gosh, the first boyfriend that I actually thought we were going to get married, I mean, give me a break, I was 14, he was 15, but I just thought, well, you know, we'll just keep going out till we're old enough and then we'll get married. Well, that didn't last very long, and when we broke up, that's when I already had an eating disorder. But that's when the suicidality kicked in. So from 15 to 22, I did not think I should tell anybody that I wanted to kill myself, because then I thought they wouldn't let me, or they might put me in a facility or something. Didn't want that. And I also thought, well, it better be pretty foolproof. Well, at the time, and I must have been 16 by then because I could drive. I used to drive all along Camino Cielo and all up in the mountains because I thought it was really beautiful, and everybody knew that I did that, and so that wouldn't have been odd. And so I thought, well, so if I just accidentally eased my car off a cliff, it wouldn't make anybody, I mean, they might be sad, but they wouldn't think I committed suicide. They would just think, oh, what a terrible accident. She loved the mountains so much. And so that was always in my back pocket. And I didn't say anything to him. Well, now I find out afterward that means I was pretty darn serious, and it could have happened. But it actually, I think having that in my back pocket as an escape kept me a lot saner than I was, although that's a pretty relative term. I don't think given a lot of the things that I did, I was very sane at all. I would absolutely trust completely dangerous people, and I would be so suspicious of trustworthy, nice people. I remember at one time I was studying in Europe, and I went out with a guy who was actually kind of an important criminal person in a certain area. And I didn't know it at first. I was told later, and it didn't even faze me, because he was nice to me. That's not sane thinking, but that's where I was. Yeah, I mean, we'd be here for a long time if I talked about all my poor choices. But to tie that in with the program, we get to make better choices. We get to make more informed choices. One of the first things I usually find myself telling newcomers when they see that big, thick red book that we have, is like, don't do what I did, because I so badly wanted to be well and completely have all this crazy dysfunction behind me by the time I found my way to ACA that I read that book in 2 weeks. And I was completely overloaded. I almost had a nervous breakdown because it was too much insight, it was too much information. And it's not like I understood everything it says, but I took in enough that I couldn't function. And I had to step back from it completely and just not read it, not look at it. I probably skipped meetings for about a week, but in the beginning I would go to a meeting every day, and sometimes more than one. I would go to Al-Anon or whatever was available because I just needed that support. There's something about walking into one of these rooms, and I would say that's higher power's presence. It feels safe, it's a relief, and whatever, you know, if your stomach's in knots, whatever it is, it relaxes just by being around everybody. Our little phrase, we have lots of little phrases, but the one action coming from love, that speaks to me probably more than any of the stuff that we kind of hang our hats on, because I didn't even know where whatever actions were, where the motivation was coming from, whatever actions I took. And usually it would be fear or shame or self-hatred or whatever they might have been that was getting me to do whatever I was doing, people-pleasing. It wasn't love. And even if I had thought it was love, my concept of love before really digging into 12-step programs was just way off, way off. So many things that I had done that I thought were loving were just terrible. I mean, in a way, I haven't seen him for decades, and I wouldn't really want to see him, but I would have amends to make to my first husband. I definitely stirred things up and poured oil on the fire when things were bad. I didn't know. I didn't understand how to stay calm. That thing that I told about where I just stayed still and ended up falling on the floor and giggling, that was the first time I ever just stayed calm, and the outcome was really good. I had a point. Oh, well. I'll find something else to say. Mm-hmm. The motivation. And being able to learn what healthy love is, it often is just nothing like what I would have thought. When I was first going to all these AA meetings, I think between 5 and 10 AA guys all told me, and it's like I had to hear it 5 or 10 times, the most loving thing their wife ever did for them was divorce them. Because it wasn't until then they even started to look at their issues. And that was one of the things I felt really guilty about. I felt so bad for like abandoning that man and kicking him to the curb. And of course I was this horrible person who did that to him. I think I needed a little bit of safety and a little bit of freedom, but that wasn't how my distorted perception was seeing it until these helpful friends in AA just pointed out, you know, if anything's going to save him, that might. The last time I did see him was about 25 years ago. I bumped into him unexpectedly at a store. Things didn't look so good then, but that's a long time ago. I mean, I pray for him. I certainly, anybody I've ever had a relationship with, I forgive them. I would love it if they forgave me. I wish the very best for them. Very early on in program, somebody said something that really stuck to me, and that was, anybody that really troubles you, the more they trouble you, the more you pray for them. Whatever the awful, whatever it is, just pray for them. And it really works. I actually, if somebody cuts me off on the freeway or does some kind of really just dangerous, crazy, awful thing, I'm like, oh yeah, God, could you please help them? Because I think they're probably having a bad day. But it comes naturally. I mean, I don't mean to be Pollyanna about it. It's like, I've done this for so many decades. It really helps me. Because then I don't spend the next half hour fuming that somebody just did something really annoying. It's like, wow, I really hope the best for them, because I think they may not have a program given the way they're driving. So things like that, praying for people. And I've certainly seen it work miracles with my kid's dad. I did sadly marry a second time. Here's where 12-step, boy, I made a big mistake. I was really excited about 12-step, really excited about God, decided, in addition, there's kind of like a horizontal presence of God in these rooms, and I thought, well, I kind of want to find more of a vertical connection. And so I was looking for a church, and I visited a bunch that didn't feel right, found one that was amazing, and I thought, oh, well, maybe that's why I went to program, so I'd find a church. Great church, nothing against them, love them. But when I stopped going to Al-Anon, that was a huge mistake. Had I still continued with Al-Anon all the way through, I would never have married the second husband. Water under the bridge. I mean, I have two great kids. My daughter's 24, my son's 19. So I am grateful. I mean, and it is what it is. It was what it was. But I wouldn't have gotten into that situation had I stuck with 12-step. Anyway, learned a lot. And it was ACA that actually enabled me to file for divorce from him, because in Al-Anon, and you know, everybody's supposed to do what's best for them. You seek your higher power's guidance, you work with your sponsor, whatever. But I kept feeling like the saying they have, you can either leave or you could stay and recover. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to hang in here, I'm going to recover. And it got to be too much. I'm not going to go into details. Very interestingly, he's not an alcoholic. But wow. Oh, talk about wishing somebody well and praying for them. I literally used to pray 45 minutes a day for him. And that was to help me, because I just couldn't believe what was happening in our lives or where our lives had gone. But I think the prayers helped, because what ended up happening, I finally did file. That we'd been married, I don't know, definitely more than 25 years. This is about 4 years ago now, and I felt like God totally gave me the go-ahead. But then I get out of the office, and I was fully expecting to just like completely get this ball rolling, finish it up quickly. And then I think to run it by God. And God says, just sleep on it. Sleep on it. So I sleep on it. Next morning, okay, God, I'm ready. I'm going to just like... And I keep checking in, and I've seen all the good that's come out of it, but it's been more than 4 years, and I still haven't felt the release from God to go ahead and pull the plug. So we live under the same roof. He's supposed to stay in his part of the house. Kids and I stay in ours. He doesn't understand boundaries, but he is very sorry. He is bending over backwards to be helpful and kind. The abuse, it was emotional abuse. There was no physical abuse in this case. All the gaslighting, all of that stopped. And so what we have now is, he's paying the bills. He's paying for my kids while they were in college education, our vehicles. He's doing all these things, which had been the agreement, because when we got married, I had said, look, I'll work outside the home or inside the home, but I can't do both. I won't have kids if I'm working, because I didn't want my kids to think that I hated them, because I just didn't have the energy to deal. By 5 in the evening, which is it's a miracle that I'm here tonight, because I can't think straight. That's going to be my excuse after I'm done talking to him. But the abuse has stopped. He's supporting us. I approve both my kids' decisions. My daughter said, I'm not talking to him. I'm not having anything to do with him. And I said, good for you. It's a good choice. My son said, you know, some of my friends' dads are dead. My dad's alive. I'm going to build some kind of a connection and have a relationship. Good for you. That's great. People have to do what's right for them. And so there we all are. And I used to worry about it. I used to try to figure it out. People have these wonderful things like, well, don't you have goals? You should have dreams. You should do this. You should do that. I can't do that. I can be right here, right now. I can be in my program. God's right here, right now. I can't do future. But I remember thinking one time, if God really is who I've come to think God is, why would I ever worry about anything ever again? I mean, it's not logical to me. I feel like God's pretty capable. So I just choose to trust. And it's remarkable all the good that has come out of it. My daughter has been willing a couple times to talk with him a little bit if it's just something that has to come up. My son continues to talk about being the adult of the family. He's the youngest. I mean, he's 19. And the maturity that comes out of that kid blows me away. If I do hear kind of like, it's not my place to step in. Also, he's 19. He's an adult. But if I hear something where I'm just starting to think, wow, you really didn't need to say that to your kid. Then I hear my son pipe up and say, Dad, you know, I'm really not into this. I'm not going to do this. And it's over. It's like he's working program, so I'm very hopeful to think maybe my being in program is just kind of seeping into him through osmosis. But we're all growing, we're all maturing, and none of this would be happening without ACA, because it's just so clear. To be able to see myself and to understand what's going on with me by reading the books, by hearing people share, working on the workbooks. My biggest aha moment for quite some time happened a few months ago at a meeting where a woman said, well, I don't like to label, but I think my mom's a narcissist. I just was stunned. I'm like, ping, oh my gosh, my mom. I thought my mom was Mary Poppins. I thought she was perfect. And she's got really super great qualities, and that's not my issue. The issue is all the other stuff. So I'm Googling daughters of mother narcissists. And even if you couldn't tell by looking at her, I am everything in all those lists. And I thought, oh, is that where that came from? And again, it's our blameless inventory. It's not to talk about how horrible she is, because I'm sure things happen to make her that way and distort her into that. But it's that, oh, so now that I know that, that's going to make it easier for me to find the right healing paths, and it's going to make it easier for me to interact with her. Another thing that I learned by studying a communications book, this is why I'm so glad we can bring in any literature, because if it's helpful, we want it. And it talked about something I've never heard of called matchers and mismatchers. Apparently, matchers, I'm like way on the extreme of the spectrum, a matcher. If somebody brings up pets, then I right away want to share about my pet, and like this is how we're similar and we're on the same wavelength. Well, a mismatcher is just whatever comes up they come against. So if you're talking about pets, why are we talking about pets? We should be talking about the stock market. Or I mean, whatever it is, it's going to be something else. If you say it's hot, no, it's not. It's much cooler than usual for this time of year. I mean, there's just, this helps me see why my mother would always say I was the contrary one. Because if I was trying to be positive and she'd say something negative, as far as she was concerned, I was just being argumentative and disagreeing. And I never realized that. And so another thing I learned in terms of dealing with mismatchers is you just, whatever they're saying, you find a way to agree with it, and then you just change the subject. And it's so easy, and it's so much less stressful, because I can't set her straight, and especially now that she's got brain damage. I mean, that's just a whole different situation. But when she was still in command of her mind for the most part, you just couldn't win. Because now I know why nothing I did was right. Because it couldn't be. Because she couldn't agree with it. A few times I was very vulnerable and shared something that was really important to me. And one time in particular, I shared something I wanted to do. And she just, oh, what a waste. And she was so angry with me. And we had a lot of money. It wasn't... There would have been no reason not to do this, except that she was programmed to oppose it. And I think I just realized in the last few weeks, she was so invested in me being her, and I'm like the polar opposite, that she must have been very frustrated all her life too, trying to raise me, because I wasn't coming out right. And for me, it was bad because no matter what I did, no matter what I thought I wanted to do, it was the wrong thing. I would see other people choosing careers, whatever it was, a dentist, you know, whatever, and I knew that was not going to be acceptable. So anyway, thanks to ACA, at least now I know all this stuff, and it all just starts to make sense. If something makes sense, even if it's hurtful or difficult, I find it a lot easier to deal with. I just want to know the truth. When they finally told me at age 18 that my dad's mom had committed suicide, I was very sad, but I was so relieved. Because I thought, oh good, that means I'm not crazy, I just inherited it from her. Well, yeah, it was crazy still, but it just helped to know where it was from. She was probably an alcoholic. Dad was. Her marriages, oh my goodness, you know, looking at the marriages and the problems that the women in the family have had, yeah, how could I not have replicated dreadful problems in marriages? There's no way I could have made a healthy choice. I didn't have any, I had no frame of reference for something like that, and I didn't know what healthy was. Here we're supposed to get to know ourselves, we're supposed to, again, you have goals and dreams. I had a heck of a time getting to know me because I have been the one that always, like, if people are deciding where to go for a restaurant, oh, wherever you want. If we're going to do whatever, oh, whatever you think. Well, that's kind of irritating when somebody just wants somebody to say something and everybody, oh, get a bunch of codependents together. That's really cute because they're, well, whatever you like. No, whatever you like. That's really fun. But humor. Oh, I think that. Hearing people laughing about things in meetings has been so healing. I remember sharing, because my first AA group knew that I was suicidal, and then when I said, you know, you guys, I think I'm making progress because I'm actually shifting from suicidal to homicidal. To be able to laugh about something, I really wouldn't kill anybody. But it was just, it was a kind of a relief to feel those feelings. Because I wouldn't have let myself feeling feelings. You know, as kids, we got in trouble for laughing. At the dinner table, if you laughed, you got sent away from the table. We were not allowed to cry, and if you got cried, you got, if you got cried, good one. If you cried, you got sent to your room. And trying to make those feelings happen when they weren't allowed to happen for so long is very strange. Looking back on it, I think crying at that first day of meeting was probably the first time I had cried in who knows how long, maybe even years. And so 12-step was the beginning of learning how to be human, because people have shared these concepts with me that if we don't feel the bad things, we're not going to be able to feel the good things. I've gone through a lot of my life very, very numb, just dulled to anything, very joyless. I still really struggle with joy, and of course then I make myself feel even worse because I beat myself up because I feel guilty because I have a lot of advantages. I mean, full refrigerator, full gas tank, lots of clothing, friends, safe, beautiful city to live. I mean, I can beat myself up with good things. I can take a good thing and make it a bad thing. Even program stuff. Boy, can I ever misuse that. I mean, there. Balance and applying things in a healthy way is a good program recommendation too. But having a sense of humor about things, being gentle with ourselves, being honest, being able to feel emotions, I mean, there's no healing without feeling, that is really hard and scary. But it does help, because I have had instances where I've actually felt peace, which I never felt. Something that's driven me crazy for years now, ever since I learned to do it, if you check in with your neck, your shoulders, your stomach, whatever it is, if it's tense, you're supposed to relax it. Okay, fine. Then I check back 30 seconds later and it's all knotted up again. And pretty much any time I've checked in on myself over the last at least 10 years, it's all knotted up again, no matter what I've done. I mean, I've done tons of stuff to try to make that stop. And it hasn't. It's going a little bit. I try to remember to ask God to help me with it. Usually I don't remember. But little by little, it is easing. If I check in right now, it's only really half clenched. It's not completely tied in knots. But I've had some occasions where I just kind of feel, well, this is okay. I can breathe. Going back to the word okay, I'm going to actually, I'll ask Larry now.
if I think it would be great if we had a slogan on our little cards that was World Service Approved, and there are probably lots of reasons why we shouldn't, so we don't have to do it, but I would love to see one that says, it's going to be okay. Because I really feel like as soon as we really can just turn it over to higher power, it will, whatever form, it will be okay. And my experience in life has been the absolute worst things have brought about the best thing. I'm really grateful not to continue the rest of my life as a bitter atheist who probably would have gotten more and more bitter and more superior and just more and more miserable. But honestly, if it hadn't been for being married to that first husband, I wouldn't have looked for God. I wouldn't have wanted God. Heaven forbid I'd have had a happy marriage. Why would I have needed God at all? Because my husband was my higher power. That's not healthy either, but that's where that was. Applying the program now, it's like I can apply it to everything. I don't have to talk about it. I can just live it. Wherever I am, if I start to get uncomfortable, I know now that I can, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said, stop yourself, try to find a quiet place, and ask yourself, and you can bring God into it too, what's the lie I'm believing? Because so far, every time I've tried it, I'm miserable, I'm anxious, I'm frightened, I'm whatever it is, panic attack, I'm believing some kind of a lie that I don't even notice I'm believing. And so I've done a lot of writing. I will write a question to God, and then I'll just write whatever comes. And I know it's not me, because I wouldn't have thought of whatever these answers are. I shared the other day, and God can be very exasperating. So I asked God the answer to a situation, and all I get is just this tremendous sense of how much God loves me. It's like, yeah, that's very nice, but I need to know the answer to this issue. And I finally catch on. The point is just to relax. God will handle it. I can just be God's kid. I'm loved. I'm going to be helped. And it doesn't mean I don't have to put in effort, but I really feel like it's kind of like, I mean, if you were pulling a cart and there's an elephant, and again, the concept of the mosquito comes to mind, but very, very different from my earlier mosquito. So yeah, we're both hitched up to the cart and we're both supposed to be pulling, but I mean, who's doing most of it? It would be God. But I get to go along for the ride. And that's been really nice. I mean, looking around at these rooms and, you know, what I go several times a week and seeing familiar faces, new people, it doesn't matter who they are. Gosh, I just love them. If I don't know them yet, I love them already anyway. It's such a relief to have a place where we can go, we're going to be listened to. I mean, here, I've been talking for like 40 minutes, and everybody's still listening. I still see all these kind, warm looks. Didn't get that growing up. My parents weren't capable. Dinner table, we were required to be there, and we darn well better be polite and well-behaved, and Mom would hold court. She's super intelligent. It was interesting sometimes, but there was no back and forth of ideas. I mean, in meetings, everybody says their piece. Afterward, we get to have the back and forth, ask what, and people like listen, think about what you said, comprehend it, add something. It's mind-boggling. Who does that? But we do. We get to do that in these meetings. The fact that I have a feeling this is always going to be here, I love continuity. I like tradition, but not the stifling kind. And we don't have the stifling kind. When I was a little kid, we were forced to go to church. And that really didn't work for me on so many levels, as much as even then, I mean, I kind of think I did believe in God as a kid, and I wanted to believe in God, although it went away. But it was very rigid, and I had really bad allergies. The church was super quiet, so I'd be sneezing and blowing my nose in this silent church with a whole bunch of people with somebody talking at the front. It was torture. And I think here, if somebody sneezes or whatever, people just kind of say, bless you, and it's like, no big deal. So I doubt there's anything that applying ACA to it wouldn't work. I mean, it might take a while, but I'm pretty sure this is it. This is the answer. It's kind of like my favorite thing because I feel like it will work. I not only can be myself, it's not an obligation. We don't have obligations, but I know the part of the point of this is learning how to be ourselves. I'm very shaky at it. It makes me very uncomfortable, but I can see the point, so I'm going to keep trying. And I love when other people are themselves. I love seeing things, like when people come up with stuff that they didn't even know was in there. I have a sponsor, a sponsee, and a fellow traveler, and I can't believe the way these relationships are developing. I mean, for both sides, it just brings out parts of us that I don't think any of us realized were there. And it does make things fun. I'm starting to find some fun because that was really a challenge. I mean, just having fun, being happy, I did not think that should be so hard, but it certainly has been. So I'm very, very grateful. So in terms of now, I mean, go to meetings. We're trying to start the new noon meeting. We'll see where that goes. I happen to be doing H&I, which is really, really good. It was very difficult at first. My dad was bipolar in addition to being alcoholic, and I had visited him in 5 East twice. That was pretty hard. But as I got used to going to these 5 Bath meetings, it's wonderful. It gives me so much more than I feel like I give them. But I do feel like it is a healthy, it's like it's helping, but it's not codependent. It's so awesome to be using the way I wish the word enable only had the one definition of like assisting in accomplishing a good thing. Because I think we are enabling them to find a way. You know, we're showing them something most of them have never heard of. And they can look into it if they want to. And it's given me so much. I've found myself sharing things I didn't remember were in there just by being in those meetings. So I guess any of these opportunities, I mean, tonight, I did not know I would be speaking tonight. But I guess I'm coming away from it just feeling more loved. And I felt very loved by you guys when I got here, and I feel a lot more loved now. So thank you very much.